on the part of the board of directors. I'll introduce myself as I became the ex-president today of the Philadelphia Society. This is my last session as president. Don Lipset asked me also to announce that the eating and drinking in the hotel is always on the second floor. The meetings apparently are on the third floor. Also, there's to be an ISI gathering, I think, after this evening session downstairs in the where we have the cocktails. And the, you've all have programs, so I won't bother to tell you about tomorrow. We have our annual meeting tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. And I presume that is where, Don, are you here?
Yes.
Where's the membership meeting tomorrow? It doesn't say.
I'm in the cotillion.
The cotillion room is where? Where we had the cocktails? Where we had the cocktails. That, 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Well, it's a pleasure to welcome you. Is this the 9th annual meeting, Don, by the way? We've had quite a few. I think it's about the 9th. The 10th, is that right? All of our meetings, I might say, have been in Chicago. I believe all our annual meetings, except the first, which was in Philadelphia. Nobody seems to be agitating to change the name of the society. But the Mount Pelerin Society, I'm told, after which this society really was more or less modeled, finally had another meeting in Mount Pelerin, their 25th annual meeting, the 25th anniversary meeting last fall, the first one since they were founded. At that meeting, on that occasion, Irving Kristol, who spoke to us, as you'll remember, 2 years ago, gave a paper and talked about some of the great issues of our time. And he remarked that the intellectual battle against the planned economy had been won to a degree no one would have predicted when the Mount Pelerin Society was founded in 1947. And hardly had his listeners finished mentally congratulating themselves on this welcome piece of news, but Mr. Kristol went on to say that this was another case of won battles but a lost war, because, as he said, the battle isn't, that the issue isn't economics at all. Now, however that might may be, I don't think that we at the Philadelphia Society can point to any won battles, or much less a won war. But in choosing equality as the subject of our meeting, we can at least assert with considerable justification that we are not avoiding the issue. Equality is without doubt one of the primary issues, if not the primary issue, the war, or perhaps more exactly, the revolution we're in is all about. How basic the issue of equality is has been pointed out by many people, but by no one more persuasively, perhaps, than by Wilmore Kendall. And Wilmore Kendall is one of the former members of this group, together with Richard Weaver and Frank Meyer. We should remember with gratitude for what they did to give the ideas form and coherence that have brought us together. In his essay, What is Conservatism?, Kendall had this to say on the subject of equality, or as he calls it, the egalitarian principle. And this is quoted from Kendall. It says, that is, the egalitarian principle says, that men are not merely created equal, are indeed not created equal at all, but rather ought, that is, have a right, to be made equal. That is to say, equalized, and equalized precisely by governmental action, so that if they end up other than actually equal in political power, in wealth, in income, in education, in living conditions, no one shall be able to say that government has spared any effort that might conceivably have made them equal. The equality of the Declaration is the equality to which, say, Abraham Lincoln was born, an equality that conferred upon him merely an equal right to compete with his fellow men in the race as we run it here in America for whatever prize he and his equality chose to go after. Not so the egalitarianism, the liberals. It must pick Lincoln up at dawn in a yellow bus with flashing lights, so saving him shoe leather, whisk him off to a remote consolidated school, financed in all probability by inflationary bonds, feed him a free lunch, educate him for a democracy, protect him from so-called concentrations of social and economic power, eke out his income by soaking the rich, doctor him, hospitalize him, and finally, social work him if, as he probably will now, he turns into a juvenile delinquent. The equality of the Declaration, by offering him the rewards of self-reliance, encourages him to become, above all, self-reliant. Egalitarianism encourages him to learn to play the angles. Revolutionary, yes indeed, and in a threefold sense. Revolutionary, because give the liberals their way, and the American social order will not bear even a cousinly resemblance to that which is traditional among us. Revolutionary, because the revolution must go on and on forever, since if you're in the business of making people equal, there is and can be no stopping place. Revolutionary, finally, because the job cannot be done by a government of limited powers. Well, so much for Wilmore Kendall. It is appropriate that the opening paper should be given by Ernest Van Den Haag, since it was he who suggested the general topic of the meeting. Our good friend Stephen Tonser will act as chairman and introduce the speaker. And Mr. Tonser, as you all know, is professor of history at the University of Michigan and is now a visiting fellow, I believe, at the Hoover Institution. I'm very pleased to turn the meeting over to him.